You're listening to North Atlantic Radio with your hosts, Brian Zunda and Matt Rigott.
Welcome back. Thanks for listening. This is North Atlantic Radio. My name is Brian.
And I'm Matt.
And we're back. I think this is podcast number 5. How time flies.
That's 5 times 3 weeks already.
That's right. Well,
you do the maths, Brian. You do the maths.
We gotta stay on top of things every 3 weeks. We slipped a little last week, but that's because we were going for quality, not time.
That's what we're telling everyone.
That's exactly right. So I think this week we've got, this podcast, we've got a few things lined up today. We're going to talk a little bit about AP and their crazy attempt at creating H News, which they claim is a micro format, but it's just a format. I've got a bit of a gripe on that one. No, we'll talk about that. Matt's got a few choice comments calling out some stats. We've got our new kind of feature, site of the week, or site of the podcast, some crazy thing we found recently, and then back to what we're reading.
Brian, I'm going to read out a few things to you. Extreme Makeover leaves pirates with no names. Bankruptcy judge approves lender's bid for Delphi. Exxon, Shell extend rough streak for oil sector. Now, if AP has its way, Associated Press, then that's me breaking the law because I've just read out their latest headlines, shock horror, which they're trying to demand I should either pay money for or shouldn't be able to use anywhere across the web, which everyone's pretty much just laughed at. But of course, when a big company gets a ridiculous idea in its head, you can't just laugh it off because they suddenly get a lot of lawyers involved. And recently they've started talking about using micro formats, which is probably where you know more about this than I do. So what do you think of their new H News micro format that apparently is going to stop people from copying their content across the web magically?
Yeah. The first bit is that micro formats, the way they work is it's kind of a community effort. It's very bottom up, and people propose new ideas. We go out on the web and we find examples and try and build up very common, you know, rule sets on existing data. And basically what the AP did is they went out and on their own just invented this thing called H News and are calling it a micro format. Now, in reality, it's not a micro format. It's just something that they came up with. Now, smartly, they took the HAtom micro format, which models Atom feeds and RSS feeds, and just extended a little bit to add some of their own necessary values. I think a few things like, you know, pub date for embargo date, and a few rel CC and a few licensing elements, which is their attempt at DRM, and it's a DRM on plain text. So first off, it's quite laughable because you just can delete that little line and send it on. And secondly, like you said, like the TV, music, movie industry have all realized that their customers hate DRM. So what does the AP do? Invents DRM. And like you said, I can't imagine this is going to go down well. And it's one of these things people are clutching at straws on a dying industry.
But, I mean, yeah, they haven't even invented a good DRM. They haven't even invented a DRM that would work. If you've got no. HNews HTML classes hidden, you know, in the source code of the page, if I go to an article and I'm reading, I think, yeah, that paragraph's excellent, I'll just cut and paste that and, you know, just discuss that paragraph. Well, the browser doesn't copy and paste the HTML code for you. It just copies the plain text. So you've magically using the awesome power of copy and paste, you've magically got around their DRM. So
circumventing DRM is illegal?
Maybe that's why they're doing it. Maybe because, yeah, if you use copy and paste, you're circumventing DRM, which would be a happy place to be. But I mean, considering they've got some techie bods to build upon an existing microform, HAtom, and introduce it, they've obviously got some guys involved that know what they're doing. So I can't believe that at some point no one's just said, you know, guys, you know this isn't going to work, do you?
No, and I wonder if maybe the disconnect from the tech department. The tech department's thinking, great, you know, these will move around as atomic units. People can use semantic web and pull information out. And then when they passed it up to the PR department saw completely other angles on why this is good, and what ended up coming out to the public was just exploded in their face.
Yeah, I mean, let's just set aside the stupidity of the whole technical argument for the moment and say, assume it works. What are they then going to do? If I copy and paste a paragraph of text, you know, fair use, and it's perfectly fine for me to do that, perfectly legal. I'm not copying and pasting the entire article. I'm just using one paragraph to, you know, add my own to it and discuss what they've written. They then somehow discover that I've used that paragraph. What are they then going to do? Just demand that I take it down? Even though it's completely legal, are they just going to put pressure on me and they're just going to do this to everyone except Google and newspapers?
We're also assuming that the DRM is like copyright as opposed to with attribution. I mean, that also could be what they're asking for, is, you know, cite your sources better. I mean, we do a pretty good job of that, but some people probably don't, and some people might be claiming it as their own. And I can't speak for their intentions on why the AP is doing it. Again, it didn't quite come across as executed as well as it could, and it does seem like they're clutching at straws on an industry which is changing under their feet, and they can't figure out what to actually do. And the best way that they've come up with is sue their users.
Well, hopefully they'll fall flat on their face, they'll look stupid, and they'll have to cancel the whole idea.
I mean, I was quite happy when this was mentioned on Boing Boing, not because the AP get a black eye out of it. It's that Boing Boing is a really high traffic site, and they're dropping the word microformats like everybody should already know what it means. So to me, that's a little warm, fuzzy bit in my heart that it's breaking into the mainstream enough that they're just assuming that they don't have to qualify microformat as something that blah, 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 blah. So that's good.
For any of UK listeners, you'll remember that in the last week or so, the NHS has released a website where you can find out whether you've got swine flu or not, which is lucky. To try and reduce the load on doctors and so on. The website's at www.pandemicflu.direct.gov.uk. It's pretty much just an expert system. You go through a series of questions where you get multiple choice answers. But when it first came out, it was mentioned in all the national newspapers, and they mentioned a couple of ridiculous statistics, which was that the site was getting 9.3 million hits an hour, which I just thought, that cannot be right. That absolutely cannot be right. 9.3 million hits an hour, that's over 2,500 hits per second, which is just an astonishing number. So I quickly checked, because I know Twitter has awfully big problems managing the load it gets. And there's a few sources, a lot of people said between 2 and 3 million. So assuming 3 million Twitter messages get sent every day, that's just over 2,000 an hour. So apparently the swine flu website was getting another 500, 600 messages every second than Twitter gets in an hour. It just, that cannot be right. So I'm calling bullshit on that. There's no way that that's true. What I think happened is that someone in the press office for the NHS or something said, how many hits are you getting? And the guy looked at the last, like the busiest 5 minutes on the website, and then just extrapolated it out and said, oh, 9 million an hour.
Well, even then, 5 minutes, that still means that they would have to have sustained that many hits in that 5 minutes to extrapolate to that much amount of time. What I'm guessing is more likely that they instead of hits, they're looking at how many images, CSS requests, JavaScript requests, and then HTML requests, and summed up, for every one person visiting that site, there might be 10 hits.
Yeah, probably more than
that.
So
200 people.
You get a favicon, you get a couple of CSS files, you get a couple of images, the logo, you're talking, 10 or 20 per person.
Right, and then multiply that by 2,000 reporters checking it out the minute the thing opened up, and you could get pretty high numbers. That's not necessarily hits or unique hits. I mean, even then, 9 million people an hour. What is there, 66 million people in the UK? After 6 hours, every single person in the UK would have checked themselves. And that doesn't smell right either.
It doesn't at all. It just, I think the most of us, I mean, you get bad PR or you get bad press releases all the time. That's nothing new. I think what frustrated me most was that just every newspaper regurgitated those figures and there was no fact checking. No one sourced it. No one cited where they got it from. It was just 9.3 million. Sweet. That's a big number. We'll put it in the article.
Well, from swine flu to our site of the week, Matt's got a doozy of a find again this week. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
This is something I picked up on earlier in the week. It's from the same people that did, what was the name of the site that was like Twitter but didn't do so well?
Pounce.
Sorry?
Pounce,
yeah, from the same people that did, or from some of the same people that did Pounce, they now bring you Baconfile, which is a web interface to Amazon S3. So if anyone's used Amazon S3, you know it's an absolutely fantastic resource, but it's a complete pain in the ass to upload anything to it. So Baconfile is there to make it a hell of a lot easier for you to do that. So you go on, you sign in like you would with any other web service, and then you can just upload files through their web interface to your own S3 bucket as well. It doesn't use a central bucket. And they're working on a Mac OS X desktop application as well, where you just drag and drop your files in, and it'll allow you to upload.
I have seen in the list of Baconfile files, there was a disk image. I don't know if it was which version. But that's the other thing that's slightly unique about it. Where you show up to baconfile.com and you'll just see lots and lots of people's uploaded
files.
Yeah,
the publicness of that is a bit odd.
That's another great website. Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing around with it.
So once again, we finished the podcast off with the section about what we're reading. Now, I have to admit, when we first started doing this bit, I wasn't convinced on whether it was good enough or not. But I was down in the pub earlier this week and bumped into a friend I haven't seen in probably 4 or 5 years. And we had a pint, and he asked me about if we're still doing the podcast and if we're still going to carry on. I was like, yeah, of course we are. And he said, you know what, my favorite bit is the bit at the end when you talk about what you're reading. And I said, why? And he said, because Brian's always reading about 5 books and you always make excuses about why you're not reading anything. So, and unfortunately, I'm going to now move on to the book I'm reading, which is very different to the book I was reading last time. The book about China, which I said, I think I was on page 28 on the last podcast, and I said people could demand to ask to find out what page I was on. And I've given up on that book. So there you go, Al. And once again, I've given up on a book. But the reason being was I was just reading through it and then just thought, this book is just crap. I had a ton of information in, but it was just very, very dry, very, very boring to read. So I just thought, screw it. I might as well move on to a book I do want to read. So this week, or this podcast, I am now reading Vernon Bogdanore's The New British Constitution, which is a brilliant book. Really enjoying it. And it's all about the history behind why Britain doesn't have a written constitution, how its laws have come about, why we still don't have a written constitution despite a lot of people wanting it and virtually every other country in the world having it. And I think I'm maybe about 50 pages in, so that's as far as I've got. But it's a really, really good read. And I promise you I'm going to stick with this one. So next month I'll update you on how far I've got.
This week, this podcast, I'm still working on, I'm working on Misbehavior of Markets by Benoit Mandelbrot, the same guy who did the Mandelbrot set. He's done some fascinating mathematical stuff, and he's talking about financial markets. And I've picked it up for lots of other little side projects I'm working on, and it's just a fascinating look at digging into statistics and sort of chance. It complements really well the Black Swan that I read a month or two ago now. So it's really good. And along with that, I'm working on Edward Tufte, the visual display of quantitative information. And again, it's all about how to display stats and how to, things to watch out for when people are lying about visualizations. And you see, like, you know, the picture of a cow and it says, you know, beef sold in 1980, and then a cow which is twice as big, and they're trying to say that the amount of beef we're buying now is twice as much, but actually the volume of the cow, if it grows twice as big in both directions, is 4 times as much. And just calling out a lot of people on really bad information display and how to do good information display as well. So I'm about halfway through both of those books. It's absolutely fascinating. They're really good complements of each other. As always, we have an email address of hello@northatlanticradio.com. So if anyone has any feedback about the podcast or things they want to hear about, or maybe fact check some of our poorly described facts, feel free to email us in and we'll try and correct it for the next podcast. Until then, we've got about 3 weeks to find some more interesting stuff on the web, and we'll talk to you then.